The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
What is going on? It is the Hoop Ball Clippers podcast. Brandon Marcus back with you. We got a good one on tap for today. Jovan Buha of The Athletic will be joining us to chat about the Los Angeles Clippers' first two preseason games, his observations, and going forward, what we can expect from the Clippers. A lot of talking points. We'll talk about Zoo versus Ibaka because obviously Zoo was the main focus of our attention during the playoffs when he was not getting minutes over Montrezl Harrell. Do we have another one of those situations that may be coming up later on in the season when Clippers fans are clamoring for Zoo to play only to see that he is with the second unit and not starting like it seems like Ibaka is going to be the starter? Very interesting. And I'll talk to Jovan about that because he's written about it so far in The Athletic a couple of times. If you have not subscribed to The Athletic, you should do so because he writes some incredible stuff. There is a hashtag that I'm sure will go trending at some point. Always read Jovan. He does a really nice job. So he'll be joining us to talk about the Clippers and the rotations and just in general the preseason and then going forward the regular season and covering the team during a pandemic and what that is going to be like. Before we get to Jovan, there is a little bit of housekeeping that I would like to get to. First of all, if you're listening to this podcast, you know that this is a part of the Hoop Ball Podcast Network. And at Hoop Ball, we've got a couple things for you that you want to take advantage of. First of all, it's the Bruise Letter. What is the Bruise Letter? It's free, first of all. Yes, you heard me, free. The Bruise Letter is back for a second year. This is when Aaron Brewski, our founder, writes an email newsletter filled with the most intimate fantasy nuggets. He talks about every single team, has nuggets for every team, talks about his team a little bit greater length in the Sacramento Kings. Exclusive content you cannot find anywhere else, too. It's not on the website. You can't go find it by searching on hoop-ball.com. No, it goes straight to your inbox. That's it. It's not on a podcast, not on social media. All you have to do is go to something very easy. You ready? Just go to bit.ly/bruiseletter2021 and sign up in 10 seconds. Again, the site is bit.ly. That's bit.ly/bruiseletter2021. Aaron Brewski, straight to your inbox. Enjoy it. Thank me later. Of course, one more thing. The Fantasy Pass. Hoopball is a great website. We know that. So what can we do to help you? We have a fantastic deal right now. The best deal in fantasy is here at Hoopball. You see subscriptions. They're really expensive. Not the case here with the Fantasy Pass. It's just $4.99 a month. It gets you the entire draft guide, so you can go and nail your draft, because I know some of you are going $25 leagues, $50 leagues, $100 leagues. It's just $4.99 a month, and it's going to be worth it. The Brewski 150, Brew does an incredible job with that. He's nailed some big ones recently, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chris Paul. He does a tremendous job. Our DFS pass is in there. Yep, you can go and play DFS every single night, only $4.99 a month. So if you want to go and enter a $2 contest every night, a $1 contest, or maybe occasional $5 contest, you may make your money back in one night. So the DFS pass, the entire draft guide, the Brewski 150, and all in-season fantasy tools. It's nuts, all that we're giving you. $4.99. Cook yourself dinner tonight instead of ordering delivery, and you can afford the fantasy pass for half a year. So please do check it out. Head to hoop-ball.com. Click on the fantasy pass ad just below the main media wall. All right, enough of me. Let's go ahead. Let's talk with Jovan Buha. You read his work in The Athletic, and he just does tremendous work. I mean, this is a guy that works his tail off to get you all the information from inside the team and covers this team really like nobody else that does cover any team in the NBA. Also has some of the best shoes and hair in the game. Jovan Buha, what's up, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Great to have you back. The Clippers season is about to start. I never thought we'd be sitting here on December, I don't know, whatever, what day it is, the 14th, and thinking that we're going to have basketball in a week. But here we are, and it's just a couple months removed from the Lakers winning the title, and the Clippers are about to start their season. Before we get into anything really detailed. What's the vibe kind of like? Because it seems like it's very strange from the outside that the season's actually starting. I mean, does it seem like from what you've noticed that guys are engaged and they're like, all right, it's here, we're ready to go?
It seems that way outside of the Clippers actually playing.
Yeah, well, the two losses and the garbage that we've seen, but preseason basketball, man.
I mean, I would say based on the quotes that have, you know, we've seen on these Zoom calls, what people have been saying, it seems like, you know, Ty, you know, is pushing all the right buttons in terms of, you know, I think the offense has looked better in the two, I wouldn't even call them two games, two like halves for the Clippers. And specifically with the starters, you know, I think the bench, they're still trying to figure out their identity. And we know it's going to be a lot of Luzu pick and roll, but you know, there's a lot of new pieces just overall with this group. So I think they're still figuring that out. But I feel like everyone's saying the right stuff. You know, there has been accountability and ownership on what happened last season and trying to move on from that and learn from it. And then there's also been talk about moving on and kind of putting that behind them and focusing on this season. And I do feel like just from the, you know, being at the two games and seeing the team go through layup lines and be in timeouts and stuff, it does feel like everyone is more engaged. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course, that part of that is just it's a new season, and you know, I think motivation is always highest coming into a season, and it's about sustaining that, you know, especially as you hit adversity and stuff. But I do feel like the Clippers have visually looked more on the same page to me. And again, I think, you know, looking serious in their layup lines and every time there's a timeout, everybody's huddled up and everybody's tuned in, which wasn't always the case last season. So again, it's early, that can change, and they haven't really faced any adversity yet, but I do think that, you know, from what we've seen, they do look more locked in and like they're taking things more seriously than I think they did at this point last season.
That's good, because it's really hard to just get straight into it after. I mean, frankly, first of all, we're in a pandemic. Second of all, it's one of those things where they were in the bubble for so long and they go home to friends and family, and who knows how much they're actually working out. And then you go and I think they had their first official practice. What was it? A week ago Sunday, so 8 days ago, was I think their first official day of training camp or something like that. So it's like they haven't been with each other for very long. And initially it was small groups that were working out. So it's tough to get straight into it because the season, before you know it, is basically a week away. So I feel like it's hard to get straight into it. So it's good to hear that you're saying that it does seem like they're engaged. You mentioned something that I kind of want to ask you more about. You said that the offense looks better. Let's not forget that the Clippers had such a good offense last year. So I'm curious to get detail-wise, why do you think it is better? And in what areas does it seem to have been improved?
Well, I think the process is better. Okay. Obviously, the results, as you said, last season, they were number two in offense. They were number two in net rating. It is hard to go up from that. But I did feel like last season, you know, I think this team at its worst was very ISO heavy and very mid-range heavy. And they had the personnel to get away with that in Kawhi and PG and Lou, as well as obviously the Lou Trez pick and roll, which was basically the heart of the bench offense. But I just felt like there wasn't much off-ball movement. And, you know, overall, I felt like the offense just was pretty stagnant. And I think looking at, you know, and again, it's been glimpses because I think it's mainly been with the starters and not as much with the bench. And the starters, I think, have played something like, you know, 6-8 minutes a game together. I feel like there's been better flow and off the ball. You've seen, you know, running like double staggers for PG and kind of, you know, screen the screener stuff. And I think Serge Ibaka brings a different element to the starting lineup that, you know, now they can go five out. And now you've seen, I thought especially in that first game where you had Trez, who's a drop big and someone who plays closer to the paint defensively, you know, where he kept dropping back and Ibaka was wide open. And you're going to see that, I think, time and time again against most starting centers. You know, unless it's a very mobile, you know, versatile, switchy defender, you know, someone like an Anthony Davis, I think, you know, most bigs are going to drop and leave Ibaka open for three. And he's become a really quality 3-point shooter the last few years. So I think overall, just, you know, it's just been more the process of the offense is flowing better. I think you now have more playmaking wings and Luke Kennard and Nicholas Batum. And those guys have been kind of up and down in these games. But I think just their ability to pass, to handle the ball, to playmake a little bit, that just, you know, is another thing that this team didn't really have last season. Because I kind of look at, you know, their comparisons to or from last season's team, you know, Rodney Magruder and Landry Shamet. And I think both guys are upgrades, you know, as overall players, but specifically as ball handlers, playmakers, you know, passers. So I think overall, just the offense, they still haven't fully solved some of the playmaking issues. And I'm sure we will see in the regular season some of the same issues that happened last season. But overall, I think they have better shooting, they have better floor spacing, and they just have better overall movement. So I think that's where I'm most excited to see what Ty does this season, because I think that's where he's the biggest upgrade over Doc.
Yeah, I hate ISO ball. I mean, whenever you have ISO ball, it just ends up in just bad shots, hero shots. It stops the offense, it stops the flow, and that's an easy way to all of a sudden see yourself on the back end of a 12-0 run or something like that. And that type of play just completely kills a team. So I'm glad to hear that. You mentioned Zoo. I want to get into something, and I'm going to get out in front of it before it becomes a talking point later in the season. It's one of the most fascinating things to me. I did not expect Ibaka to be a starter, but all of a sudden we've seen he is in there with the starters in the first two games. And you wrote about it in your piece about one of the observations you've noticed so far in the first two preseason games with Ibaka. And you mentioned, obviously, his three-point shooting and the different dimension he brings to the offense. But we were clamoring for Zoo all postseason because of his defense and how this is a guy that needs to play 30 minutes. You cannot bring in somebody that will steal Zoo's minutes. You cannot have Trez back because you'll be forced to play a guy like Trez for 15 minutes longer than you may want to. Well, here you go. You get an upgrade of Trez and Ibaka, and he enters the starting lineup, and all of a sudden you have Zoo go to the second unit. I know that obviously the defense will improve with the second unit with Zoo in there, but are we going to be talking about this again later in the season, how Zoo should be with the starters? Because it seems like we were talking about it for so long, how we want Zoo to play big minutes, and now is his opportunity, and then Ibaka comes. Read into it what you will, but what do you think about it? Like, what the hell is going on with, you want to have this guy be the focal point in the starting center, and then all of a sudden now he's the bench center?
It's at first I didn't really get it, and I'm still trying to rationalize it. I think my bigger issue with it is that, you know, I think at this point in their careers, Serge Ibaka is the better player, and I do think he is a better player than Montrezl Harrell. He's a more modern fit. You know, he's a better shooter, he's a better rebounder, he's a better defender. So overall, like, you know, I think the issue last season, you know, unless you were closely following the team, most, you know, people around the league or just casual people, you know, casual fans would have said Trez was better than Zoo, right? But, yeah. But obviously, if you were watching the games and you saw Zoo's impact, I think most people, you know, that follow the team closely would have said the opposite, that Zoo is better. So this season, I think it's a little bit different because Ibaka can do a lot of what Zoo can do. You know, he's a good screener. He can block shots. He can protect the rim. He's actually more versatile and switchy defensively than he's better offensively. You know, he's coming off averaging career high 15.4 points a game. He was a 39% 3-point shooter the last couple of years. So like, he is, you know, I would say better overall. Like I'm you know, I know I'm a big Zoo guy, but I'm not gonna deny that. My bigger thing is that I think when looking at how they fit with both groups, Zoo is a better fit with the starters than he is with the bench, where Ibaka is versatile enough to fit well with either one. So I do think that while I really like the fit with Ibaka and the starters, and I do see how dangerous that group could be, because again, I think you are plugging in a lot of what Zoo can do and then adding even some more stuff with Ibaka's shooting. To me, it kind of compromises the bench a little bit, where I don't think that's the best use of Zoo. I think already you have some spacing issues with the bench. And now, again, we don't know what Ty's going to do as far as the full rotation. You know, we don't know if he's going to kind of platoon it like Doc did, or maybe he's going to integrate the starters in the bench and always have a Kawhi or a PG on the floor and, you know, try to balance the shooting better. But if he does go with a bench lineup and it is something like, you know, Lou, Zoo, Batum, Kennard, and then like Reggie or Pat or Terrence, like that group does not have a lot of shooting and there isn't a lot of guys you're necessarily going to respect offensively. So I think adding another guy in Zoo who's paint bound, who does need someone to set him up, I just think that really cramps that group's offense. And then defensively, it's not that good of a group. So yes, Zoo will help them, but that's where I look at Ibaka and I'm like, okay, at least if you're putting Ibaka with the bench, he can pick and pop with Lou. He's going to space the floor when he doesn't have the ball. And, you know, he is versatile enough defensively to help that unit, I think, in a lot of ways that Zoo would. So I just think overall, you know, Zoo is not as clean of a fit with the bench. I think when you look at these kind of more traditional plotting centers, they tend to fit better with starting units and then not play as much with the bench. Like you've seen that kind of big, you know, decline, even be a you know, call it a token starter or whatever, like that guy usually doesn't come off the bench. So I do think that overall for the, you know, the betterment of the team, I think it just makes more sense to start Zoo. But I guess I get what Ty, where he's coming from with, like, this is maybe our best possible lineup. Like, Ibaka is a better player than Zoo. He should start. And who knows? Maybe that was a promise with Ibaka in free agency. You know, maybe that was you know, he came off the bench in Toronto, but I don't think he was the biggest fan of that. So maybe, you know, the Clippers promised him, hey, if you come here, we'll start you. But to me, again, you know, I think we're in agreement here. Like, it just makes more sense to start Zoo. I think you compromise his value a little bit, bringing him off the bench, unless you really are going to stagger and not have a bench unit. To me, it doesn't make as much sense.
Yeah, you summed up my feelings, to the T. I mean, it really is something that confuses me in the way you're developing this guy, and you want to have him with better players and the starters and not have all of the pressure on him to carry a second unit defensively, because obviously he does cover up some of the mistakes that a guy like Lou Williams makes. And that's one of the benefits to having him in the second unit. But you put him in the first, you put him with the starters with guys like Kawhi and PG and Beverly and Marcus Morris when he's healthy, and you have a lot of scorers around him, and he just has to do the job defensively to protect the paint. And he just seemed to work well with that group last year. I mean, we saw the numbers. The numbers don't lie, and it's something that was so confusing to us during the postseason, is that the numbers are right there in front of Doc Rivers to not play Montrezl Harrell and to play Zoo, and he didn't do it. So now I worry you go down this path of no return where you start Ibaka, you give him more minutes, and all of a sudden you're only playing Zoo 16 minutes a game, 20 minutes a game, where that's exactly the opposite of what you wanted coming into the season. And you bring up good points in terms of what he does with the spacing and the ability to shoot the three and the pick and pop, and PG saying how nice it is to have that stretch five, and it's not something he's had throughout his entire career. But I do worry, Jovan, that let's say Lou Williams gets hurt. God forbid Lou Williams gets hurt. What is that second unit going to look like offensively? I mean, and the thing is, you can go ahead and switch Ibaka and Zoo, but then you have chemistry issues perhaps with a bench unit. I would hope that what you're saying in terms of staggering Kawhi and PG does happen. I have said also that I wouldn't be surprised if Marcus Morris, for example, is thrown in there with the second unit, because basically the second unit plus Marcus Morris would be what the Knicks was like before he was traded to the Clippers. And I think that's definitely a benefit to having a guy like Marcus Morris. He's used to being the focal point of an offense, which could help. But I don't know, man. It just seems like this is something that you were building upon for so long to get to this as Zoo as a starting center, and you go and take two steps forward, and now you're taking like five steps back, it seems like, in my opinion.
Well, another thing that, you know, I think has to be factored in here is, you know, Kawhi has a pre-existing relationship with Serge. Mm-hmm. You know, they obviously have a friendship. Again, I think it's very plausible that Serge, you know, a condition in him choosing them versus choosing another team, you know, because they only gave him the non-taxpayer MLE, like, you know, multiple teams, you know, contending level teams or just, you know, good playoff teams could have paid him that. You know, he could have gone elsewhere. Obviously, he wanted to be in LA. He wanted to be with Kawhi. But, you know, I'm just wondering if, you know, and this isn't anything I've heard. It's just kind of speculation. Like, maybe he was promised a starting job and this is, you know, part of that deal. And then, you know, another thing was that I thought what was interesting yesterday or, you know, rather last night with Lou and Zoo and, you know, talking about their pick and roll chemistry. Mm-hmm. You know, Lou mentioned his hands and how Zoo has kind of been struggling to catch the ball and it's something he needs to improve on. And like they've talked about it. And that's stuff that like Kawhi and PG talked about last year as well. And I you know, part of me wonders maybe the veteran ball handlers, you know, specifically Kawhi, PG, Lou, like don't have as much confidence in Zoo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that he kind of has to continue to build with them because, you know, looking at, you know, everyone's been talking about Ibaka shooting, but he's actually been finishing really well and had some nice pick and roll moments as a roller with Paul George. And, you know, if you look at how he's been scoring, a lot of it has been around the rim and the paint and catching and finishing. So that's something that I think people don't talk about enough with Serge. He's actually a really good finisher. You know, he is big. He's athletic. He's long. He can finish around guys. So I wonder if, you know, just at this point, the Clippers are kind of prioritizing, hey, you know, this guy is the better player at this point. He can do a lot of what this guy can do just better. And are, you know, other guys on this roster already trust him more. So, you know, as frustrating as that can be for, you know, as an observer and knowing how good Zoo is and how good he can be, with the position the Clippers are in, you know, maybe they are kind of prioritizing that. And I'm more okay with that than like, had they brought back Trez and started Trez, like, you know, that to me would have been like a flawed line of thinking. And, you know, I think he's clearly not a starting level center. But Ibaka, you know, again, I think at this point is better than Zoo. It's just more about the fit between the two units. And you know, I think Zoo fits better with the starters. I just think, you know, he makes more sense there than off the bench.
Yeah, and I agree. And we'll see. You bring up a good point with his hands. And it's something I noticed, actually, that was very obvious in the first game, that he was getting a lot of passes that were right underneath the basket, and they were going through his hands. And that's something that he did not have happen last year. And there was a big emphasis last year about how good his hands were and how bad his hands were the year before that. And so clearly you noticed the step forward last year, and it does seem like he's taken a little bit of a step back this year. Hopefully it's just rust and something that he's able to improve upon as the season goes on. Where do you think the happy place is with minutes, with Ibaka and with Zoo? And do you think they play together? I mean, do you think it's 24 each? Do you think it's 28 and 20? I mean, and do you think they do play together?
I think they will play together. You know, I think that you know, actually could be something we see opening night. You know, I think they do make sense against the Lakers. I don't think there are many teams they make sense against. You know, off the top of my head, like Lakers and Denver are the two teams I've thought of that play, you know, two kind of more plodding bigs. I mean, obviously AD isn't plodding, but, you know, that's where you'd probably put Ibaka on AD and then you'd put Zoo on Trez or Marc Gasol. And then if the Lakers downsize, go, you know, Markieff or LeBron at the four, then you sub Zoo out. Same thing with Denver, where you probably put Zoo on Jokic, and then you could put Ibaka on Millsap or Green. And then if they go smaller with like Porter Jr., then, you know, you take one of those two out. But, you know, I think when they, you know, face two big man tandems, like those are the instances you might see them. Mm-hmm. I think the fit makes, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, Serge, I know a lot of people compare him to Trez and kind of like Trez's replacement, but to me, he's almost like he's more similar to Jermichael, and he could just do everything, you know, Jermichael did, but better. And, you know, that was something I think we were disappointed in last season, that we didn't get to see much Zoo Jermichael because, you know, Doc was so tied to having Jermichael play with Trez and Lou that he didn't get to play as much with Zoo, but I thought that was a really clean fit, you know, especially defensively. So I do think in certain matchups, Ibaka has the mobility to defend fours. You know, I think one thing that gets lost with him is he has lost some of that athleticism. And if you look at the game, you know, kind of logs on Basketball Reference the last couple of years, like he has predominantly been a five. You know, he has transitioned from a four to a five. So, you know, I don't expect him to play a lot at the four this season. But I do think there are matchups where it makes sense. As far as the minutes breakdown, you know, Ibaka has been trending down minutes-wise. You know, last year he only played 27 minutes a night, which was, I think, his fewest since his second year in the league. So I do think with the condensed schedule, with the team being very cautious with their players, and with him being 31, you know, you could see him maybe in that, like, 25 range, 25, 26, you know, maybe a slight dip. And then for Zoo, I think, you know, I was looking at him as like a 24, 25 minute a night guy. Maybe they play, you know, 2 to 3 minutes a night on average. But I do think that's going to drop a little bit, you know, with him coming off the bench. I just don't see him playing as much as if he was a starter. So I see him maybe in that like 21 to 23 minute range. And you kind of have that clean split there where, you know, maybe Ibaka's 25, Zoo is 22 or 23. Maybe you have like 1 minute or something where that's going to like Marcus or Fee or someone at the five. But it's going to be tough. And, you know, I think one thing that will kind of boost the minutes is we know that guys are going to have absences because of COVID, because of injuries, you know, and who knows, maybe the Clippers end up load managing some of the veterans. Like already Lou's barely played in preseason. He's played 12 total minutes. So, you know, maybe Lou or Pat or Serge or resting games here and there along with Kawhi. So, you know, on those, you know, games that Ibaka's out, Zoo ends up playing 28, 30 minutes a night or something. So I think there are ways to kind of balance it out and get Zoo, you know, more minutes. But overall, I do think him moving to the bench, it does not bode well for his long-term projection in terms of minutes this season.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk about our friends at MyBookie, folks. It is just unbelievable what MyBookie has in store for us. I know that some of you like gambling, some of you don't. Some of you don't quite know what to do when it comes to gambling. MyBookie.ag has you covered, whether you are a newbie or you are someone that's been in the game for a while. Odds boosts, lightning deals, free bets, they await you all season long. The NFL playoffs are right around the corner. We know who these teams are. We know what they're capable of. It's not difficult to find some value in lines. Not at all. Whether you want to go and take an underdog or maybe even as a favorite that tickles your fancy, our guys at Hoopball Gaming will help you as well. So whether you want to do it on your own or you want some help from the guys at Hoopball Gaming, MyBookie.ag is where they make it easy for you. It doesn't even need to be games. I know you want to bet on the NFL, maybe Premier League, NBA. You also can go classic table, slot games, card games, anything you can see at your local spot. They've got you covered in this fully fledged casino platform. The best part is MyBookie, the doors never close. You continue to build your bankroll even after the stadium lights have gone out. Make the right play. Sign up today at MyBookie. When you do, use the promo code HOOPBALL to get your deposit matched halfway, all the way up to $1,000. The terms are simple. You put in $200, they'll match you with another $100 in your account. If you're already playing to bet this season, this is free betting money. It's winning season at MyBookie, so come join in on the fun and win some cash while you're at it. Back to Jovan. You mentioned Fee, and you mentioned another guy, obviously, Terrence Mann, that we've discussed before, and it's something that's interesting to me, and I feel like as someone that's been following the Clippers for a long time, it's something that frustrates me as a Clippers fan. It does seem like the Clippers in the draft just continue to really strike out there. I mean, they obviously got SGA, and they ended up trading for him on draft night. But apart from that, you have to go back, I feel like, all the way to 2010 to find a player that really did seem like a rotation player in Al-Farouq Aminu for the Clippers. Do you think that one of these guys actually becomes someone that the Clippers can rely on, whether it's Fee or Terrence Mann?
Not this season. I do think maybe it's Terrence. You know, I he hit I believe it was this past game, he hit that three off the dribble, which looked pretty clean. You know, one thing with his shot has just been kind of the release and how slow it is, and just not really having that like clean flow to it. So I guess Terrence would be my guess. Like, you know, Jay Scrub obviously, you know, is going to be out a few months, and him being a two-way guy, you know, I don't even know if he ends up playing this season, or at least playing, you know, with the actual 15-man roster. Then you have Oturo, who to me, you know, flashed a couple moves offensively. You know, again, it was against the Lakers third string unit, and you know, it's preseason, but I feel like, you know, he's someone that maybe a couple years from now could end up being a rotation guy, depending on how his development goes. So really we're looking at Terrence and Fee here. And you know, with Fee, I think his shot looks quicker. You know, and that's something that's going to be important, because I think for him to earn minutes, he's going to have to hit threes at, you know, a league average or above rate. He's also going to have to, you know, defend pick and rolls and defend the rim well, which he hasn't shown he can do yet. So, I mean, I don't really see the pathway to minutes for him, because already, you know, we're talking about Serge and Zhu, who in a perfect world are guys getting, you know, 26, 28, closer to 30 minutes, you know, all things being equal. So you kind of already have a minute squeeze with those two. And then I don't think there's anything that's shown that Fee can play the four yet. You know, maybe I'm wrong on that. But that was why the Oturo pick was kind of weird for me. It was just, if you look at the strengths and the weaknesses of, you know, Fee's scouting report and Oturo's scouting report, they're very similar. You know, similar sizes, kind of like fives and like a four's body, and, you know, just kind of, again, similar strengths, weaknesses. And it was a little confusing to me why they drafted Oturo when you had just drafted Fee and they project so similarly. So I would say, you know, as I've written, like, I think the one blemish on the front office's track record over these last few years has been the draft. You know, you mentioned going all the way back to 2010, like, you know, some of that is not on this front office. Like, they didn't draft Trey Tompkins and you know, Travis Leslie, like different guys. So,
right.
You know, I'm just looking at the last 3 years. You know, it has been very up and down and mainly down. And really, aside from Shea, who, you know, had top 10 talent but ended up falling to them, you can make the case like they've busted on all their picks.
That's what I'm saying, man. I mean, apart from obviously it wasn't this group with Lawrence Frank, but I mean, it seems like they really have hit or missed rather on every single pick. I mean, you even go to 2016 where Bryce Johnson, everyone was like, oh, this is going to be a guy that can, he's a 3-and-D. This is exactly what the Clippers need. CJ Wilcox was whatever. Reggie Bullock, another one where they went, oh, another 3-and-D. It seems like Bryce Johnson and Reggie Bullock, I mean, guys from North Carolina, it seems like they just continue to miss. And there are other teams that I feel like are not missing every single year.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, what it kind of looked like also for a second that they were, you know, they were in that 2017-18 season, like they were kind of the first ones to really use two-way contracts and like embolden, you know, it was Ty Wallace and I'm blanking on CJ Williams was his name. You know, so you had Ty Wallace, CJ Williams, you know, guys who were getting minutes, you know, off of two-way contracts. And it looked like, okay, maybe this is going to be a thing for the Clippers. But since then, it's kind of been the rest of the league who's been finding these like two-way gems. And the Clipper, I mean, you know, I like Amir Coffey. Jonathan Motley obviously like never became of anything. But you know, I do think when looking at their track record over the last several years, I think the two weak points have been the draft and then identifying, you know, kind of underutilized or overlooked talent across the league. Like, they're not the Miami Heat or the Toronto Raptors. You could also say player development, but that's more, I think, on the coaching staff than the front office.
Yeah, that's fair.
In terms of, you know, the front office doesn't develop the talent. It is the coaching staff. So I would have put that more on Doc, on his staff. But I do think, looking at, you know, this is a team that could benefit from having, you know, finding talent like Miami can, or like Toronto can, or Brooklyn, or some of these other teams that have just found these undrafted, you know, or second round picks that they get passed around. And like the Clippers haven't really, they've had guys who've had like little moments here and there, again, like a Ty Wallace or even Amir last year had a couple moments, but not guys who are like legitimate top eight, top nine rotation players. So I do think it's something that's interesting. Like, you know, another thing, like I almost wish they were more like OKC and that, you know, OKC kind of has a type of, they always draft like the athletic wing or big who has all this potential, if they could ever develop their skill set, but, you know, they usually end up not developing it, but like, it's at least like a young, promising, interesting player. Like the Clippers haven't really drafted that type. If, you know, if you look back at all the names you just mentioned, it's guys who are like juniors and seniors in college and were like 21, 22, and came in and didn't have much potential or were billed as NBA ready and then weren't NBA ready. And that's the thing. And that was kind of like the Fee pick. Like Fee was supposed to be NBA ready. And if you watched his 200 whatever minutes last year, he was not NBA ready. And you know, it, with such a short turnaround, we don't know if he's NBA ready, but, it is a little bit concerning and it is something that, you know, I do have faith overall in the front office. And I think that, you know, they are always evaluating their moves and what they're doing right and wrong. And I think this is something they're gonna have to figure out and work on because, again, you know, I thought it was kind of a similar thing in this draft where they draft this like NBA ready prospect that doesn't really have a clear role on the team. And it's unclear what their actual like potential is. And there were several guys who ended up going after Oturo who were projected to go in the first round in the 20s and they passed on. So, you know, those are going to be the guys that he gets compared to, you know, a couple of years from now when we're looking back at this. So I'm not to go back to your original question. Like I guess Terrence maybe can be the 10th man on this team if he can hit threes at a decent rate, but I don't know if he can do that. And you know, aside from that, I don't really have much confidence in the young guys, at least this season. Maybe, you know, next season or two seasons from now that they show more development and growth. But based on what we know going into the preseason and regular season, like I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, I worry for the second unit if Lou does get hurt or misses games. I'm just not sure where the scoring is going to come from. Let's get to season predictions. How do you think this team does? Because once again, it seems like they are probably a top two team in the Western Conference with the Lakers. I would tend to believe that the team that you see today is not going to be the team that you see once the trade deadline is over. I think that they'll recognize that something needs to change. I don't know what it is yet, but we'll obviously have to see. I mean, we went into last season thinking they need a point guard and they need a big man, and they didn't get either. So I'm curious to see what this team looks like. How do you think they do, and can this team win an NBA title?
They can win. I'm going to temper my expectations. You know, because last year I was actually more down on them in the regular season. I think I did like several preseason podcasts and radio hits and you know, just different writings, and I think I was putting them like 3 through 5 in the West. I just felt that with Kawhi's load management, with PG entering the season, you know, not healthy, and just I thought they were actually going to rest Lou and Pat a little bit more last season. I figured that, you know, this team is probably going to be have the talent of the 1 or 2 seed, but end up somewhere 3 through 5. That was, you know, wrong. They finished, you know, as the 2 seed. And frankly, that was like in spite of all these injuries and had they had normal health last year, I think maybe they do push the Lakers for the 1 seed. I think this year I'm looking at probably the 2 seed again. I think it's probably going to be the Lakers again as the 1 seed and the Clippers as 2. And then I guess right now, if I had to predict with the current roster, I would peg them as losing in the conference finals to the Lakers. I do think that the Lakers have the best team and should be the favorites again. That can change. I do think that there are, you know, while I think the Lakers got better, I think they match up worse with the Clippers right now than they did last season.
Yeah, and the defense is worse too.
Yeah, I think the defense has gone worse, and I felt like last season, JaVale and Dwight, even though they didn't play much against the Clippers, like, you know, the Lakers ended up kind of downsizing a bit and going with the AD Morris pairing more, especially in that like bubble game. Those guys were just so big and long that it felt like the Clippers, it always took them like a quarter. Like, I don't know if you remember, but like, it felt like all four games, the Lakers got out to like a big first quarter lead. And it was like the Clippers were adjusting to their length and trying to figure out how to attack them. And like, I think it was like the Christmas game where they had like five blocks in the first quarter. And it was just like the Lakers looked huge compared to the Clippers. And that looked like a problem. That's not going to be the case this year. I mean, they still have Anthony Davis, they still have LeBron. But Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell are different bigs. So I do think that while the Lakers maybe got better overall, they probably match up worse with the Clippers or just don't have as many advantages against the Clippers as they did. So that to me bodes well for the Clippers in a potential Lakers matchup. I just think as currently constructed, I do think with what LeBron and AD did in the playoffs, like, if they can get back to that level or even close to it, that on paper is better than Kawhi and PG. And a lot of it depends on what level PG is at. You know, if he can get back to that OKC top 10 level, I do think the Clippers can push them and maybe win. And of course, there's always the variables of health. And so I'm with you. I think the Clippers are going to make a move by the trade deadline. I'd be shocked if Pat and Lou are both on the team. I think they are going to end up trading one of them. And they are going to make some type of move that probably improves the roster. And maybe that changes my tone where I make them the favorites. But I do want to temper some expectations going into this season, right? I think kind of losing their minds with the fantasy of the team. And we did see that team for stretches and they were really good. But I'm going to temper my expectations. I do think they can win the title. I think there's probably only four or five teams that could win it, and they are in that list. But I do think there are some concerns. And unless they do make the right move, around the trade deadline, I would probably put them second or third right now in like my power rankings and, you know, would pick my number one team right now.
Yeah, it's whoever stays healthy. Whoever stays healthy, whoever avoids COVID, and whoever handles this year the best. I think my one hope for the Clippers is that their team chemistry is good, because last year was a mess. You detailed it throughout the season. It was an absolute mess in the locker room. And my hope is that these guys mesh well on the floor, because that's one thing the Lakers had last year. Each guy knew their role. They were happy about it. They had no complaints. They seemed to love playing together. The bench was going crazy for each other. It just seemed like that's one thing that I really hope happens with this Clippers team. Whether it's the one seed, it's the three seed, that's all I want to see, Jovan.
I personally think that the chemistry is going to be better. I think that Serge Ibaka is a huge, that's another thing with him. It's not just the on the court value and fit and how good he is. I think he's a connector. You know, he's someone that if you see his personality, he's a guy who will, make fun of people and keep everybody on their toes. And, he's pretty much the only teammate we've seen get Kawhi out of his shell publicly. So if you can do that, if you can infiltrate Kawhi, you can infiltrate a Pat Bev or a Lou Williams. And I do view, like, I felt like the Clippers didn't have that guy last year. Like, if you really look back at last year's locker room, they didn't have that kind of funny jokester guy who keeps everybody loose. Like, they had too many, serious guys and kind of ornery guys. And I feel like this, like, you know, even just the additions, we'll see how they end up panning out and what they have left in the tank, with a guy like Nick Batum or Luke Kennard, if he can stay healthy. But like, I feel like all these guys are high character guys and guys who have different personalities than some of the personalities that were on the team last year. They kind of have gone away from that junkyard dog mentality that they had the past couple of years. But I think there are some benefits to that. And I think that could come with some better team chemistry. So I think for this team, it's the regular season doesn't really matter. Like, I think it matters in establishing chemistry and continuity and getting on the same page and really hitting a nice groove. But like, whether they're the one seed or the five seed, you know, I think this team could beat anybody. And it's really just about getting to the playoffs, having, you know, the necessary on-court reps, and then, you know, playing who's in front of you. But, you know, I think as long as they're not playing the Lakers, like, I don't see how you would pick any other team in the West above them in a series. And then even if they are playing the Lakers, again, I think they match up better now without all that size in there that you know, to kind of protect the rim and bother Kawhi and PG on drives. So I think, you know, maybe with a move or just staying pat, they are the better LA team. So that's something I'm going to be watching for all season. And, you know, I think it really is just about building the chemistry and continuity and getting those reps. And I think if they do that, they'll be fine regardless of seeding.
Yeah, I think the Lakers lost a lot defensively with losing Dwight Howard, losing, obviously, Avery Bradley, who, I mean, good, bad, indifferent, whatever you want to say about him. And then, of course, you lose some other guys that help you out defensively. It just seems like bringing in a guy like Montrezl Harrell is not really the answer. So it'll be interesting to see. Jovan, man, it's not easy covering a team in general, but to do it during a pandemic is even harder, where you don't quite have the access that you normally do, and you still do a tremendous job. Man, a big thank you to you for hopping on. Where should people go to see you? I know it's at Jovan Buha on Twitter. Of course, sign up for The Athletic, because frankly, it is a great deal for all the content that you get. Anything else that you want to promote?
That's it. That's it. Just social handle at Jovan Buha, JOVANBUHA. And then make sure you subscribe to The Athletic.
Jovan, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a big thank you to Jovan for jumping on once again. Love having him on. He just brings incredible insight. And he is not just a beat writer and someone that follows a team. He really knows his X's and O's, and someone that brings a unique insight and does do a tremendous job when it comes to the quote-unquote investigative pieces, where he digs deep into the team. He does a really nice job, has a great pulse on the team. So please do go and subscribe to The Athletic and follow his work and read it and do anything that you can do to help him out, because he really does a great job. And we want to keep those guys that are able to get that type of insight going and continuing to write those types of pieces and stay employed. So before we say goodbye, a big thank you to all of you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at BD Marcus. You can follow the Hoopball Clips Twitter handle. That's at Hoopball Clips. And of course, I have to bring up our friends over at Manscaped before we say goodbye, because it's unbelievable. It is the holiday season. We are just about a week and a half away from Christmas. We are in the middle of Hanukkah. Whatever you do celebrate, Manscaped wants to get you the perfect gift. Whatever it is, you've heard me talk about the Lawnmower 3.0 and what they have done to just perfect this electric trimmer. And I know some quarantine beards are getting long, and perhaps you want to clean up upstairs, maybe downstairs as well. Lawnmower 3.0, simply the best hygiene tool, really, for the modern man. It's a ceramic blade and skin-safe technology. You're not going to get any cuts. It's unbelievable what they do to make sure that you can get a clean look and make it so easy, whether it's the light on the shaver that gives you a close shave, or you can even go into the shower and use it, because it is waterproof, and they have an incredible charger that is USB powered. So please get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code HOOPBALL20, whether it's just the Lawnmower 3.0, or perhaps you want to go bigger with the Perfect Package 3.0 with a new and improved lawnmower, waterproof cordless body trimmer, the performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag. It comes with a crop preserver and crop reviver. Unbelievable what they have for you. Head over to manscaped.com. Use the code HOOPBALL20. Now, before we say goodbye, we have one more game for the Los Angeles Clippers. The preseason wraps up on Thursday with a game against the Utah Jazz. That'll be at home. And then the Clippers will hit the road, the 22nd quote-unquote road game against the Los Angeles Lakers is how their season will tip off. After the Lakers, what is on tap for the Clippers? At Denver, and then at home against the Dallas Mavericks on Sunday the 27th. So we'll come back at the weekend. We'll recap that Utah Jazz game, and we'll look ahead to the season opener with the Los Angeles Clippers and the Los Angeles Lakers. A big thank you to all of you who listen. Please continue to rate and review the podcast. Give us 5 stars. Leave us a review as well. Share with your friends and continue to subscribe. Just helps make this podcast grow. Big thank you to you, the listeners. I'm Brandon Marcus. Until next time, go Clips!
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.